Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ProPublica Opportunity Gap Education Call. Our goal today is to provide you with some tips on how to look at the project so that you can do some reporting on your own based on the data. Before we begin, I'd like to advise you that if you're near a computer, please go to our Opportunity Gap site so that you can follow along. The web address for that is projects.propublica.org/schools. projects.propublica.org/schools. And after brief introductory remarks by our team, we will open it up to question. Here's the operator, Operator Sarah, to tell you how you can place a question.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Okay. So leading the call on ProPublica's end is our chief education reporter, Sharona Coots, and she will give you an overview of the project. Then our director of computer-assisted reporting, Jennifer LaFleur, will discuss how we put the data together. And then one of our news applications developers, Al Shaw, will show you how to share the findings via Facebook and other tools on the site. With that, here's Sharona Coots.
Thanks, Mike. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time out of your day, and we hope that you get something out of this. Like Mike was saying, the goal of this call is to show you how you can use our news application, what we'll refer to as the app, in your own reporting, not only to illustrate your reporting as you publish it and share it with others, but also hopefully as a tool. This is a very interactive feature, and we're hoping that you'll find ways, and often ways we probably haven't thought of, that you can involve your readers in your own reporting. So I'm hoping that most of you will have had an opportunity to take a look at the app. For those who haven't, I just want to give you a very quick description of it. I guess the three main things that this app allows you to do would be, one, to quickly see how your state compares when it comes to whether low-income or higher-income students are having the same access, and I'll explain further what I mean by access, to high-level school courses that have been shown to be important for academic success. Two, it lets you quickly get basic statistics like total enrollment, enrollment by race, percentage of free and reduced price lunch students, and things like the number of certified or inexperienced teachers in states, districts, and schools, depending on which variables you're looking at. And finally, it allows you to generate your own customized comparisons between schools and districts. And they pop up like baseball cards that you can shuffle and rearrange. And that's the feature that Al will talk a lot about, because he built in ways that you can integrate that with social media through things like Facebook. And that's his work there has been pretty innovative. So we're very excited, and we want him to speak about that. During the call, we're going to be talking about the data, and then we're going to be taking questions. I just wanted to quickly answer what I imagine is a sort of preliminary question. Why did we do this project, and why do we think it's important? So the project is based on a new set of data that was recently released by the Federal Department of Education. Their Office for Civil Rights collected this data in the 2009-10 school year. So it's fairly recent, but it's not the most recent. It's the most recently available, but things may have changed in the time since it was collected, so you'd probably want to check that sort of stuff. And it's the first part of two sets of data. The reason that the Civil Rights Office collected this sort of thing is because, as they said to us, looking at statistics about what opportunities are provided and then being able to break that stuff down by race is one way that they can start to identify schools and districts where there might be a problem from the perspective of civil rights. While statistics alone, they told us, wouldn't be enough for a complete investigation, it's one clue. So they're very interested in civil rights and equity. So we thought that was very important. We were very intrigued, and we were pretty keen to dig into it. So now I'm going to actually pass the mic to Jennifer LaFleur, who is our Director of Computer-Assisted Reporting, and she can explain what was in the data and what she did with it. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks. Thanks, Sharana. And thanks again, everybody, for being here today. Our analysis included data for all schools in districts with at least 3,000 students. So sometimes you may see a district not in there. That's because it was below that threshold. And that's what we have because that is the basis of the survey that the Office of Civil Rights had. As with any database, we had to account for some problems we found in the data. So unlike what will be available on the Department of Education's data, we've actually corrected some data in cases where there were extreme outliers or impossible values that got, you know, either entered wrong by a school district or something else happened. So we did make those checks on the data. We realized that there may still be things in the data that we haven't caught, so we're welcoming folks to let us know if they see anything. We basically used a statistical tool called linear regression to look at the data to see if there was any relationship between all of the variables in the database. We tested lots of things, but in the end, we found some relationship between the proportion of minority students at schools and access to these advanced programs. But we found the strongest relationship, which is fairly common in education analysis, with the percent of students getting free and reduced price lunches. That variable is not in the data that OCR provided. We added that from the National Center for Education Statistics. And we found that in some states, more than half the change in enrollment in certain programs could be explained by the increase in the percent of poor students. And basically, that means that higher poverty schools did not have the same access to those programs. One example, in Oklahoma, we found that for every 10-point increase in the percentage of low-income students, the percent of students enrolled in AP dropped by 3 points on average. In many states, we saw little relationship. Florida was one that Sharona wrote about, where they've actually put in special policies to increase AP enrollment, and that's why we didn't see that same kind of relationship there. And again, in other places, there also were specific policies that may have affected whether or not these programs were widespread or isolated.
Thanks, Jen. So for folks who've got questions about data, you can direct those to Jen. I'm just now going to sort of walk you through certain parts of the app, and then Al's going to speak a bit about that interactivity, and that's when we'll turn it over to questions. So just on a note to what Jen was just saying, the reason it was important for us to add poverty data was because the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights doesn't actually have jurisdiction over poverty. That's not one of the things that they look at, so they actually couldn't include that in their data collection. So that's why Jennifer included that, and that really sort of ended up telling us quite a strong story. Okay, so to the app. For those of you who are in front of your computer at the moment, if you can just pull up the Opportunity Gap, the interactive feature, that app, I'll talk you through some of the ways that you can use it. And just sort of at the outset, I wanted to make the point that for those of you who are listening who are local reporters, state reporters who have a particular interest, like, for instance, you know, education for students with disabilities or that sort of thing, we're really hoping you use that specialized knowledge and mash whatever data you're aware of with ours. We're really hoping that you can actually see this as a tool. There is a lot in here, but for instance, there are folks on this call who are in places where there's pretty good outcome data for schools. So you might be able to use our data and then include things like graduation rates or test scores. And then you might be able to see, okay, well, looking at the opportunity analysis, does it really make a difference? Can I see here that when you've got a lot of, I mean, I'm really making this up, but a lot of inexperienced teachers or a lot of whatever, one of the variables, do we see a pattern? That might be one way you can use it. So the first way that you can start getting into this app is if you are on the homepage of the app, you'll be able to see that on the left-hand side, there's actually a sort of menu, like a list of states. And basically, above that, you'll see that there are five different variables. So, for instance, one of those variables is AP classes. Okay, so if you hit that variable, you'll see that the order of the states actually shifts. And Oklahoma jumps to the top of the list. And you'll see that for AP classes, the indicator that we have next to it becomes, it's red. It means there's a strong relationship. Where there's a strong relationship between AP classes in this case and low-income schools, that means that in Oklahoma, schools that have a high percentage of kids who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch are less, fewer of them are likely to be enrolled in AP courses. So to put it in a simplified way, kids at poorer schools are less likely to be enrolled in those courses. Kids at wealthier schools in Oklahoma are more likely to be enrolled in those courses. So you can get into this app that way by first looking, okay, well, how's my state doing in physics? How's my state doing in chemistry? Then you can actually do something like hit the state name itself and you can click through. So let's go to Maryland. That brings up the state page for Maryland. And here is where you can very quickly see the total number of students in Maryland who are in the survey, the number of teachers, the number of districts, the number of schools. We had some key findings based on a few interviews that we did. You can look at the overall percentage of free and reduced price lunch, and you can see how Maryland there compares to the national average. So that there's that brown-gray sort of bar. So you can straight away see, oh, you know, actually when it comes to overall enrollment in at least one AP course, Maryland exceeds the national average. However, in Maryland, there is a strong relationship between poverty and enrollment in AP courses. So although on average a lot of students in Maryland are enrolled in at least one AP course, there seems to be quite a bit of inequality in that state. So you can, depending on what state you're in, you can get into it that way and take a look at the numbers and the sorts of comparisons. The next thing you can do is, from this page, you can compare districts. So say you chose Baltimore City Public Schools and you hit that link. The app is going to bring up a profile of the district. So that'll tell you, again, the things like the free and reduced price lunch. It's going to give you the racial breakdown of the district. And it's got a list of the schools right next to it. And I am going to turn this over to Al at this point because this is the part where his really innovative, cool design starts kicking in, allowing you to actually start doing your own custom-made comparisons. So here's Al Shaw.
Thanks, Jonah, and thanks, everyone, for joining. Yeah, so if you're on a district page, just kind of pick up where she left off, you can actually compare that to other districts by this large blue menu on the left. And you can either choose nearby districts, high and low poverty examples, or any district at all in the state. So if I'm in California and I'm in Los Angeles Unified, I could type in, say, Hawthorne Unified, or just comes up as Hawthorne, and then hit return when in the autocomplete, and then I'll get a new page made up of these baseball cards. And then what you can do actually is sort these baseball cards by a bunch of different criteria. So if I want to sort by inexperienced teachers or AP classes or AP enrollment, it'll actually shuffle the baseball cards in real time based on those criteria. And so this is really useful when you're doing when you want to do analysis of local schools or local districts, and all these apply to schools themselves too, so not just districts. So if I drill into Los Angeles Unified and I go into any school in that list, I can do the same thing. So if I go into one of these schools, I can either press the nearby schools button, which will bring up six of the nearby schools in this baseball card viewer, which I can then sort, or I can choose high and low poverty examples, or I can actually type in my own and create a whole custom dashboard of schools. You can only show six at a time, so if you want to get rid of a school on the page, you click this little X in the top of any of these baseball cards to get rid of it and then add more schools. So once you kind of have a view that you like that you might want to share with your readers, there's a couple ways to share that. The first is anytime you change a card or change the sort on that page, the URL in the top bar will change. So you could actually just copy this URL at the top, and it's a really long URL because it includes all the schools, and you can paste that right into your stories, and then anyone that goes to it will see the exact same view you see. And you could even use a URL shortener like bit.ly to make that URL shorter. But even easier way to share it would be to sign in with Facebook. There's a little Facebook link in the bottom left. And if you click that and you authenticate, you can actually post this custom view of schools to your wall and get another custom URL with your comments next to it that you can share with anyone. Now, your wall has to be public for those comments to actually show up to anyone you give the link to. Otherwise, it'll just show up as an anonymous user. But you'll still be able to give out that link, and people will be able to see all of this custom array of schools or districts that are on your dashboard. And I can answer individual questions later during the call. One thing to know on these district and school baseball cards, there are these green and yellow lines on each bar graph. Those are the state and district averages. So if you're on a school dashboard, you'll see yellow and green lines. If you're on a district view, you'll only see yellow lines, meaning those are the state averages and how each of these districts compare to the state average. So there's a lot of different ways to slice through this data. So I can take individual questions later if you have them.
Okay, everyone, we're going to open it up to questions. Remember, hit *1 and you will go into a queue and we'll take your questions as they come up. However, I'm going to ask the first question because it's the question that we most often get, and that is, where does my school rank? So since I'm from Ohio, I'd like to know, where does Ohio rank among all the states?
I think Jen and I will collaborate on answering that one. that is one that we've been getting quite a lot. And in terms of ranking states, it's not possible to give an overall ranking. You can't just say that there's a certain number, like a level that any one state has overall. And the reason for that is a state that does really well on one indicator, like AP courses, might do very poorly when it comes to another indicator, like gifted and talented. And what I mean when I say well or poorly, I guess I should be more specific. What I mean is, let's take Florida. That state has no significant relationship between high or low income schools and the number of kids in those schools that are enrolled in AP courses. The reverse is true when it comes to gifted and talented in Florida. So in Florida, there is actually a strong relationship between whether you're at a poor or a wealthy school and whether you're likely to be enrolled in gifted and talented. Jen, did you want to?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is because it's a statistical analysis, that number wouldn't be that meaningful. But if you use that state's graphic on the front of the site, you really can see like which on each variable, which states tend to have a very strong relationship and which do not have a relationship at all. And I think that's probably the best guide. I wanted to jump in on one other thing. I see we've got a couple of Twitter questions about some additional districts or schools not being included. I just wanted to mention that we did not include alternative schools and we did not include charter schools because of specific enrollments and other reasons in our analysis. Those schools act a little bit differently. So if you have a question about a school being left out as a charter school or an alternative school, we did find a few cases where state actually designated something as an alternative school that turned out to not be the case, and we've corrected that. But that may be why certain schools are not in the app.
Okay. We're going to start taking questions. Remember, if you want to tweet a question to us, use the hashtag EDUGAP, EDUGAP. First question, operator, can you open it up to Judy Walton from the Chattanooga Times?
Your line is open.
Judy, go ahead.
She has disconnected.
Okay, let's go to the next one. That's from Becky Vivia from the Chicago News Corp.
Hey, am I on?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Thank you so much for taking my question. And I am curious if there's any possible way to, say, take, I guess, more than six schools, say, take, like, all of the high schools in Chicago and, I guess, compare them among each other and see how many AP courses they have, how many inexperienced teachers they have, and sort of maybe map in the district where there are more opportunities than in other areas. Is that something that would be possible, or would it have to be done manually?
At this point, using the dashboard interface, you can only add up to six schools through that one interface. So you'd probably have to go to the Chicago page, the Chicago district page, and then find smaller sets of schools that to analyze. I guess that was mostly just for space reasons, since it would be hard to shuffle around that many schools on a single view.
Okay.
Okay, we have a question from Lindsay Kasner from the San Antonio, Lindsay, are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Hi.
I was just wondering what you mean by relevant students.
Was there one of us in particular that said relevant students?
On the top of each of the little baseball cards, it says percentage of relevant students, and I'm just wondering
Mainly that's to just let you know that the denominator is used for just the schools that would apply there. For example, AP courses are not offered in elementary schools, and so we only did that percentage out of high school students. So that it would be those who for whom that variable applies.
We have a question from Aaron Richards. Aaron, are you there? Okay, we're waiting for another question. Remember, just press star one and we can get your questions. You can also email Sharona.Coutts, COUTTS, at ProPublica.org. Do you have one, Jen?
Well, I don't have a question. I just wanted to let everyone know that if you do want to work further with the data, there is an opportunity on the district pages to download the schools as a database, as a CSV file that you can work with further. So there are ways to download the data if you want to work with it more.
Okay, if you want to tweet a question, remember it's hashtag EDUGAP. Next question is from Chris Voss. Chris, are you there?
I am. I was wondering why the AP classes were science and an advanced math, because I'm wondering if schools have a tendency to offer more history, more AP English, those types of, I mean, why the two science and an advanced math?
That's actually, let me explain those variables again. Those were actually separate. The way the AP data is in the Education Department's data is it's students taking at least one AP course no matter what. It could be history. It could be, you know, AP French or anything. That's a separate variable. The advanced math, they have a variable on kids, number of kids taking advanced math. And then for some reason they separated out all of the science courses separately. There wasn't one for taking advanced sciences. But the advanced math included things like trigonometry and calculus and things that were the higher level math as well. And after the call, we can actually send out a couple links. I know I've had some folks ask for the actual survey and what it looked like from the Department of Ed, which kind of gives you a better sense of what districts were providing. But we'll send that out in a link following the call.
Okay, is Neil? Thank you. Is Neil Morton there? Neil, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
This question, I believe, will be directed to Jen. I was wondering if, in the link that you could send everyone, perhaps including the NCES database or tables that did list the pre and reduced lunch totals. A lot of them were inaccurate for the area I live in, and I was just hoping to see what NCES might be reporting from what year or what survey they had.
Yeah, the data we actually used in the app was the NCES data, but I'd be happy to send that out as well.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Okay, next up is Lisa Schenker. Schenker, okay. Schenker. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. I don't know how it is for the other states, but when I was looking at Utah, I noticed only a little more than half the districts are included in this site. What's the reason behind that?
Hi, thanks for calling in. The reason is that only this data collection is not every single school in the country. It's a lot of them. So every school in a district with at least 3,000 students was included. In addition to that, they did like a different kind of survey that included a sample of the smaller districts, but we didn't include that in our analysis because it just was not the right thing to do statistically. Jen can talk about that in more detail if you'd like, but we did this analysis based on using all the schools and districts where there are at least 3,000 students. So, yeah, I mean, in some of the smaller states, for sure, there are some districts that are missing, which is a shame. We wish that they were all in there, but they're not.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's all right.
All right. The St. Louis Beacon, Dale Singer. Are you there, Dale?
I'm here. For those of us who live in bi-state or tri-state areas, is it possible to make comparisons across state lines?
Not on the app at this moment, but if you were to download the data for the state, you would be able to do that. Hi, Dale.
Hi there. Hi, Jen. Thank you.
And how do you download the data?
Go ahead.
So on every district and state page, there's a link at the bottom left-hand corner that says I think it says something like expert view. Let me see. Yeah, it says reporters see a table of all results. So if you click on that and then next to the title, it'll say school districts in and then a certain area. You hit download CSV, agree to our terms of service, and then you can download a CSV of everything in that area.
Okay, we're going to move on. Jacqueline Cosgrove from the Oklahoma Watch.
Yeah, I had a question kind of similar to the reporter in Utah. Oklahoma has also had a lot of districts that aren't included, and I wasn't sure if I understood you properly. Someone had said something about the Office of Civil Rights doesn't ask those smaller districts these questions. I wasn't sure who said that or what I misunderstood.
Sharona mentioned that earlier, but I'll just add to that. What they did, and this is – they've done similar surveys to this in the past. This is really the most extensive they've done. And they did focus on making sure that they got every single district with at least 3,000 students. At enrollments below that, they pulled a statistical sample of schools that they could then use to develop national projections. But because they pulled a sample below the 3,000 level, it didn't make sense for us to use that because we wanted to show information about individual schools. So we just decided we were going to use just the ones where they had every school, which is what we did.
Okay, thank you.
So I've got a few questions coming in through Twitter now that I think I'll just go through. And anyone who's listening, you can tweet at us. We're using the hashtag EduGap, E-D-U-G-A-P. So if you want to tweet a question and just stick that in there, then we'll see it. So let's just go through a few of these. Question here is, I'm covering New York City. Can I get this data to break down by borough or district area? We would caution against using this data for an analysis of New York City at this point. Jen, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I can mention this a little bit. We are still working with the New York City schools to answer some of these questions. There were about four schools, which are fairly high academic schools that did not have the numbers one might expect. One example is Bronx Science. So we've actually gone back, as we did in many cases across the country, to try to figure out if what they submitted is accurate. So we're still working on that. That doesn't mean like the entire district necessarily has problems, but I would just be real cautious with that district because we do know there's some problems in the data there.
I just wanted to say that. But as to the actual question, breaking it down by borough, I don't think we can break this down by borough, can we? I think basically because New York City is one district, it's just district-wide, so unfortunately not. I'm also looking here. Okay, here's a question. What's the survey's definition of inexperienced teacher? The survey asked for the number of teachers in a school that had either 1 or 2 years of experience. So that was the definition of inexperienced, basically 2 or less. We're getting a few more on here. Sorry, I'm just reviewing some of those questions.
Well, we have one from Ed Walk Kimmy that says, we have high participation in AP, but only half get credit. Shouldn't this matter in your results?
Yeah, it does matter in our results. And we looked at two things. We looked at both the total participation in certain programs, and then we also looked at the relationship between poverty and enrollment in those programs. One state that kind of stood out for us that tends to have very high enrollment overall was Maryland, but it has a very strong relationship between poverty and enrollment, and so that there's definitely a distinction between high poverty schools and low poverty schools when it comes to enrollment in those programs. So we did look at both of things. The chart on the front of the page that is based on the statistical analysis looking at participation versus poverty. But as you dig down into the state pages, we've provided both of those pieces of information.
I'm also seeing a few questions here that are asking about AP, kind of, I guess, from the perspective of acknowledging that in some places advanced placement courses have been controversial, and we don't shy away from that. In fact, if you're a reporter working in an area, either a state or a district, where there has been some controversy over the value of advanced placement courses, we hope you can use this data to assist your reporting on that. Hopefully that's a way that you can actually get some specifics about the number of courses and whether those courses are being whether enrollment reflects is done in an equal way amongst low-income and higher-income students. Just because we didn't run the analysis, just because the analysis we used at a national level and in our stories was looking at income. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
And Jen, yeah, definitely tell me if I'm wrong here. But I think that, you know, if people want to look like at a very local level and see if other variables are interesting in their area, there's nothing to stop you doing that sort of thing. So we definitely don't shy away from that. Any other questions coming in on the calls?
Yeah. Tom Weber, are you there?
Hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Okay. Actually, three very quick ones. Is there any allowance or does it doesn't look like you looked into IB at all, International Baccalaureate Test. With the downloading, if I'm on a state, I can see that I can download an Excel for all the districts, but can I ever download an Excel for all the schools in the state, a compilation of all the district schools? And then the final one is just talk more about how you decided who was red, who was pink, who was white. Were you looking for a benchmark schools with a free and reduced over 75% and AP less than 10%, or were you comparing them to each other districts in the state? Kind of more about the methodology there, if you don't mind.
Gosh, that's a lot of things to remember. I hope I remember all your questions. If not, please let us know. On the IB issue, we actually did do an analysis of that in our original work, but what we found in this data is that it was cast a little bit different in how they calculated IB. It was enrollment in IB, so AP was a little bit different that way, and it was not actually listed for very many schools. I think the total number of schools in the whole 72,000 we had was a few hundred with IB programs, which is why we kind of decided to not include that nationally. But if you're in a state that actually does do a lot of IB, it would definitely be worth looking at. So, and on the statistical analysis, I'll have Al answer the question of downloading information. What we did was a linear regression to look at how much of the change in the percentage of kids enrolled in each of these programs can be explained by the percentage of poor kids. So, you know, as it's redder at the top, that means there's a stronger relationship between those variables. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
You're plotting on the chart kind of thing.
And you can actually sort that too. If you click on like chemistry, for example, or physics, it resorts it based on the darkness of that relationship. And the darker means that the stronger relationship means that poorer schools tended to have less access. So.
I think the last question was how you download all the districts in a state. Is that it?
All the schools within all the districts, because we can do all the districts in a state, but what about all the schools in the state?
Yeah, you're not the only. I've actually just gotten an email from someone asking the same thing.
Right now, that is not actually possible. You have to just get all the districts in a state, but that might be something we should look into.
Or contact us later.
Yeah, if you want more data, you can always just email us, and we can probably get you custom spreadsheets.
Cool, thanks.
And we've just got a question here by email asking whether we have Puerto Rico's data. I don't think we...
No.
No, we don't have that. Sorry, Laura Candelas. We don't have that data.
Okay, next up is Sandy. Sandy Pontios, are you there? Okay, let's skip ahead to John Burns. John Burns?
Yes. Was wondering if you had any questions looking at the poverty data, if you saw any results with the gifted and talented, or whether that data was just kind of skewed all over the place and testing has something to do with it.
We actually did look at that as well, and in some places did find a relationship between poverty and the percentage of kids enrolled in gifted and talented programs. Ironically, in Florida, where we found no relationship in any of the advanced classes in AP, we did find a relationship with gifted and talented. So it just tended to not quite be as strong as some of the other things we found, but we did find a relationship there, and it would be worth looking at.
All right. Cynthia Lai?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this is Sophia Light. So I am looking at the section where when you're looking at schools or districts, you can compare to high poverty and low poverty or neighboring schools. So there's an automatic generation that gives you two, like I guess one high and one low, and for the for that comparison, and then several options for nearby schools. And I'm just wondering how that's generated and if there's any way of if, for example, you don't want that school district, but you want a similarly high or low poverty school district, whether there's any way of getting a second generation.
For the low and high poverty schools, it's just a random – it's not random, but it's just a – it takes a representative low and high poverty district or school compared to the school that you're currently on or the district you're currently on. It's pretty much just one comparison for every school and district that you could ever be on. And that's not related to the nearby schools button. Those are two totally different things. So nearby schools is purely geographic, and it also works in – so if you're on a, in a high school, it'll show you nearby high schools. If you're in a middle school, it'll show you nearby middle schools. And if you're in an elementary school, it'll show you nearby elementary schools.
Right. Sorry, I understand they're separate, but I'm just wondering, is it – when you say nearby, is it the nearest? And when it's high or low poverty, are you – picking the highest and lowest, or is, and when you say it's representative, does that mean it's not the highest and lowest then?
So, Al, with the nearby, isn't that the ones that have the same grade range?
Yeah, nearby schools will give you the closest geographic schools that are have the same grades. So if I was, if the school I started out with was 9, 10, 11, and 12th grade, it would show you all the nearest schools in that have 9, 10th, and 11th, and 12th grade. The low, high poverty schools button gives you the schools with the highest and lowest poverty in the state that are in the same grade ranges. With, you know, so if my starting school was 9, 10, 11, 12th grade, it would show you the highest and lowest poverty schools of those grade ranges.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to Twitter. I've got a question from No Theory, and he writes, I'm interested to see how this data could be tied in with university enrollment. Any ideas as to how EduGap could tie this in?
What a great question. I don't know. I haven't really thought about how to do that. I guess you could it depends on whether you wanted what scale you wanted to do it on. Nothing really springs to mind immediately. I would say if you wanted to do it on a local level, you might be able to make some requests to a local institution. I'm not sure how you would what question you'd been trying to answer. I can think of a few possibilities, but Jen, do you have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, getting that data would be a tough thing, first of all. But if local agencies are gathering it for their own use, that would probably be the best source of it. I know there's a few academic studies out there that have looked at this, and I'd be happy to email links to those out after the call.
Yeah, I mean, I know of certain studies that have been done in some states where they try to actually track this kind of thing using like unique numbers for students so that they don't give away individual identities. But I don't know. We get back in touch with us on that one because we'll try to help if we can.
Okay, Elizabeth Chu, do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I was wondering if there is no data for a certain category like AP, how I might find out why that's the case.
Are you looking at something where you run into that problem?
Yeah, I'm having that issue with my district I'm looking at, Montebello Unified.
Where is that?
It's in California.
Uh-huh.
And it just says no, not applicable, but I know that they do have AP classes.
There were some places where we kind of made our own decision in correcting the data that if we could not verify that information with the district where – and it's cases where there might be more kids enrolled in AP than exist at the school. So we knew that was not a possible number. If we could not get correct information from a district, then we NA'd that out. So that may be some of the reasons for that.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. How about Francisco Vara-Arta? From San Antonio Express.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I had two questions, actually, so I will cram them in. The first one being about the free and reduced price lunch data set. I was looking at some of my districts, which are the most poverty poor and some of the lowest income, predominantly minority-driven districts. And for Harlandale Independent School District, which is my largest district, I see that the free and reduced lunch price lunch is at 5%, and I just find that kind of low. I was wondering what data set that comes from, and if you could tell me a little bit more about who qualifies for that.
That is from the National Center for Education Statistics data, and it is aggregated up from the school level. So it would be aggregated from all of the schools in our data. So any school that was not an alternative school or a charter school. But yeah, that definitely seems like it might be something we want to just double check. So, but it may be that one school, for example, reported something really low or really high on the extreme end, and that's kind of messing up the average. So.
And to the second part of your question, did you want us to talk about what it means to be eligible for free and reduced price lunch, or did I misunderstand?
No. I did understand that. I actually had a second question about a correlation that I noticed as well with my districts, which tend to be on the southern part of the city of San Antonio, and they are a little bit, they're more lower income, working class. I see that the level of experienced teachers, the percentage of them, is higher in those than in the two, what are considered two of the best districts here, which is Alamo Heights and Northside ISD. They're about 4 to 8%. And my district's all on the south side of the city. It's about, 18 to 22%.
Inexperienced?
I was wondering if that's something, I'm sorry?
You're saying that's the inexperienced?
Yeah, the inexperienced teachers, the percentage. So I was wondering if that's something you noticed around the country, if that's just kind of goes hand in hand. It seems like a bit of a situation that wouldn't be a shock for most education reporters, that the most inexperienced teachers are going to some of the poorest districts. But I'm wondering if that's anything you noticed in surveying the whole data.
Well, I'll let Jen answer the question about whether she noticed that looking at it across the country. But just as to the point is, like, I just want to make a couple of points bouncing off that question. First of all, I don't think that would come as a total surprise to a lot of education reporters because, it's been something that's talked about for years in education, that lower income districts generally don't have the same amount of money to pay teachers. So there tends to be a pattern where the less experienced teachers go there, and then teachers who are recognized as talented and experienced often will take jobs in districts that are able to pay them a little bit more. That said, a lot of this data, I think, is really about actually quantifying on the largest scale yet in school-by-school numbers, what until now has often been sort of known about through academic studies. Also, one of the things that I've sort of looked at when I've noticed places that have high numbers of inexperienced teachers is that's actually where Teach for America is sometimes. I'm now talking about just a couple of examples where I've looked into a particular school and said, oh, okay, that's because you've got Teach for America there. So maybe that's actually something that's worth making a couple of phone calls about to see what's going on. Maybe a little story could come out of that. I don't know. But as for whether you looked at that as a national pattern,
everything we did was actually split out by state, and I did find some states where there was a relationship with poverty and the less experienced teachers. It just wasn't strong enough to jump out at us for everything else we were looking at.
Okay, Aaron Richards, hold on. We're coming your way, but next up is George Sharpley. George?
Hi. You used a lot of information about the poverty level and so forth, and I'm wondering how that information is gathered. Is that based on the lunches, or is it documented by the actual income of the parents? How reliable is that? We're basing an awful lot on that determination.
It's data from the National Center for Education Statistics, which is reported by schools and districts to the Department of Education, and it is the basically the percentage of kids that qualify for either free or reduced lunch programs, and those are calculated based on a measure of poverty for the family.
There's been a lot of talk about that, just people just signing up without proving what their the level of the poverty is. Is that still going on?
I'm not directly familiar with that, but I don't know how schools verify that, so it's possible, but it's pretty much a consistent variable that most education researchers use for doing these kinds of analyses.
And say that again, where they came from?
The National Center for Education Statistics. I'll send a link out as well after the call.
Okay, great.
Okay, we have a Twitter question from Kayla Webley of Time Magazine, and she asks, how can national publications best utilize this data? Any tips? I don't cover just one state or district. That's a tough one, right?
Well, hi, Kayla. You saw what we did. That's the approach we took. Let me think about this. What else would I write if I were going to give away my next story? I don't know. That's a tough one,
yeah,
because it's like we sort of had him. No, it's true. We should have thought about this, that we were thinking more of like how to push this and provide a resource and a tool for more local reporters. But we would love national reporters to also use this. But I'm a little reluctant to kind of go into every other story idea that I am contemplating at the moment as a national reporter.
Go ahead, Jen.
That said, I do think it would be kind of a great tool to, especially some of the tools that Al's developed, to actually find schools around the country to go do further reporting on, mm-hmm. you know, schools that may be very much in contrast within a very close area, and actually have the data to tell you where to go on the ground and talk to people.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Like, if you wanted to, one way you could do this, whatever story you're working on, you could use this to find, like, outliers. I mean, if you're looking for a school to illustrate, like another Garfield High in East LA, like, if you're looking for a school that has extremely high poverty and seems to have very high levels of AP enrollment, and you want to tell a story about a school that's doing something like that, then you can actually find those schools in our app. You can find them, and that way you can illustrate your story.
And, Sharona, you went down to Philadelphia and explored some of the schools down there. Did that help inform your reporting?
That was actually a different story.
Okay. Moving along, our next question is from Fabian Pepper. Fabian, are you there?
Yeah. I was wondering whether when you all were gathering data, if you came across any information or numbers on teenage parents and how well they were faring in different schools. Their rates staying in school and that kind of thing.
No. I tell you what, we would have loved to have had that. I mean, this data is magnificent in a lot of ways because it really does allow you to get a lot, like, so much granular information about schools, but there's also a lot that, you know, now that we've worked with it, we wish was there. For example, another thing that we don't have, which I wish we did, is not just the overall percentage of students who are enrolled in AP, but which students, you know, because experts have pointed out to me, okay, but this doesn't account for, like, in-school inequality. So we don't have, like, student by student level data in this. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like this is an area of interest for you. Do you know of any other sources of data about teenage mothers?
No, I've just heard a lot about it from individual schools. You know, some schools that really, make an effort to keep teen mothers in through graduation and things like that, and it would be interesting to know whether those things, ideas spread throughout districts or what, but
No, it sounds like a really interesting thing to look into, but the other thing I would say is that, you know, that second tranche of civil rights data, the Department of Education is hoping to have that ready sometime in the fall, and that has, I mean, it's not going to get at your question, but for yourself and everyone listening, just to know, it does have some really fascinating other stuff that I think we'll probably be looking at as well. And that has more to do with, like, school funding, some test score results, graduation, I believe, and some discipline stuff. So I don't know. But on the teen mother thing, I'm sorry, I can't help you on that one at the moment.
That's all right. I've got another small question. It's kind of a follow-up to what someone else asked, but just to understand. So in terms of qualifying for free or reduced lunches, that's not like a fixed, say, family income across the country, right? That's kind of varies by district, probably, the, you know, which families or what income families would get those?
Actually not. It's based on national poverty guidelines. And I can send a link out to everyone for what those guidelines are around the country. You know, even though this is a pretty good measure and is used by a lot of research when it comes to poverty, you know, there are issues, as the previous gentleman mentioned. There's also issues on the opposite direction. Sometimes kids in high school tend to be somewhat less likely to request free lunch programs, and I've actually done local projects, which are doable on a state or local area, where you look at the feeder patterns from the elementary school through the middle school to the high school to really get a different sense of what those poverty measures might be. So, but I'll send a link out to all of that after the call.
Okay, Aaron Richards, you've been very patient.
Hear me this time?
Yes.
Hello.
You're there. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I had two here. I find that when I move down from the district level to school-by-school data, I lose those racial percentages. Are those available? You know, do you guys have that and it's just not listed? Or can you only look at the racial percentages when you compare districts and not individual schools in the districts?
You can see them in individual schools if you click through to the individual school pages from the baseball card titles. Or you can also get them by downloading the CSV or looking at the expert view, which is that link on the bottom left of district and state pages. So you can see them in the table view or on the individual school pages.
Okay, I'll go find that. And then secondly, is there a way to sort the data by, for instance, looking at the top 10 districts in Wisconsin that have the highest number of kids taking at least one AP class, or the highest percentage of kids taking at least one AP class? Is it possible to sort in that way?
I think you'll have to download the CSV and do that in a program like Excel. I don't think there's a way to do that within the app itself.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, to ask questions online, dial *1. And I have a couple of more tweets. MP Reports asks, did you guys look at diversity comparisons? It seems to me, after working with this, most schools are very homogenous.
I'm getting stared at, so I guess I'll take this one. We did not specifically look at a diversity measure such as the diversity index or a desegregation index. We did look at the percentages of various race groups against the outcome data, well, against the access to programs data we were looking at. But no, I did not do that, but it would definitely be something worth doing if you're interested in looking at diversity.
Okay, and J.M. Borchert asks, most Wyoming numbers are off. Enrollment in a 12,000 district is inflated by 1,000. How was the OCR info verified?
Ooh. I had a call about email about Wyoming earlier today, and we did verification on extreme cases where we knew there were some, you know, that the data could not possibly be correct. We had one school district, for example, that offered more than 22,000 separate AP courses. We knew that was probably not likely.
Because there are only 37 of them in existence.
You know, and things like where there were more teachers than students, or more students enrolled in a certain program than existed in the school, so things that we knew just couldn't be the case, we either fixed if we could contact the district or the school and get correct information, or had to NA out. The one problem with fixing just one number is that all of the data we have is broken down by category. So all of the enrollment data in our data is broken down by race, by disability, by new English learners. And so to verify just the enrollment, we would actually have to re-verify all of that information, which we've done in some cases. But I actually just rechecked Wyoming's against the original data we got from the Department of Education, and it is exactly what we got from them. So that definitely will be something that we need to look into further.
Yeah, and, you know, to the extent that folks are finding stuff that doesn't seem right or that you actually really, you know, more strongly than I think is wrong, please let us know. We would love to be able to make those corrections. You know, that said, this is the data that the government is using. I mean, this is not sort of like a game. This is the data that the Federal Department of Education is using so to make decisions. Yeah. So, you know, we did a lot of spot checks as well, didn't we, Jen? And called like literally hundreds of schools. And there were errors that we found that we corrected, but overall, it seemed to be reliable. But yeah, that's not to say that there can't be certain districts where there are sort of a higher number than average of errors. And if you pick that up, please let us know. Because we would like to fix it. Yeah.
In some cases where it appears to be an undercount, that could be simply because we did not include charter schools. We didn't include alternative schools, which might have made up for that difference. We also did not include because everything's aggregated from the school up. If there's a student, a group of students that are not counted at a school level but are counted at a district level, we would have not captured those students.
Okay, we're going to begin to wrap things up. I've got two more questions via Twitter. I think you guys have done a great job. Two more questions. One being, do you foresee adding charter school network data in the near future? Will we be able to obtain that?
We actually have the data. But we found statistically that it acted very differently from our other data. And after talking to a lot of experts, talking to the Department of Education, they said that, you know, to really have a similar group of schools for your analysis, it was probably best to leave those out since some are designed for specific groups of kids. The same with alternative schools, which is why you don't find those in our statistical analysis. But we do have charter school data if anyone really needs it. We did not do any updates or changes to the charter school data. So actually the data you can get from the Department of Education would be the same thing we would have on charter schools.
Okay. And the last one is from Travis Pillow. Any suggestions for sources of educational outcome data that we can use for comparison?
Yeah. you could wait for the fall when the next tranche of this actual survey data is going to come out, which I think could be really, really interesting. If you don't want to wait that long, there are some ways that you can go about this, and I guess we can add those links as well. I mean, there's outcome data that doesn't match up perfectly with this but might still tell you something. Like if you were trying to compare states as we did, you can look at states that have an opportunity gap, and then you can look at how they're performing sort of compared to other states on national standardized tests. But that's not a school-by-school comparison. So there are some things you can do. I don't think any of them at this stage are perfect, but there is that next set of data that's coming up that could be really interesting.
Also, if you're local and covering this on a local level or state level, your state test score data, or other outcome data your state might have or your local district would be, another way to do that. And they should actually be able to have the ability to match that up to this data if they're using just the standardized Department of Education school codes.
Yeah, I mean the main thing is like because we can't compare tests in one state to another state. But for local reporters, I mean, as long as you're staying within the same area and it's the actual same tests, it seems like that would be something that would be possible. There are also some other news apps floating around in certain places that have some outcome data on schools that you could sort of look at. I know the Chicago Tribune has a pretty cool app that you
Brian
could look
Boyer.
At. Yeah, former ProPublica person.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for participating. We really look forward to seeing your stories. If you're able to do something, please send it to us at communications@propublica.org and we'll share it. If you have any further questions, offline things, you can email Sharona or Jen, and Jen will also send around some additional links when we're done. Thank you very much, and we hope to hear from you. Bye-bye.